For nearly 2 years, we've been reporting on COVID-19 and its effects on the local healthcare infrastructure and the community at large. And throughout that time, we've turned time and again to Dr. Grace Bagwell Adams, Associate Professor and Assistant Dean for Outreach, Engagement, and Equity at the University of Georgia College of Public Health and the Principal Investigator of the Athens Wellbeing Project. I spoke with her earlier this week to get an update on the Omicron variant. Here's our conversation. Welcome back to Athens News Matters.
Thank you, Martin.
So I want to sort of start back at the beginning and talk about Omicron versus original COVID and the Delta variant. How does this new variant differ from what we've seen before?
So the new variant is different, I think, in a couple of really key ways. Based on the latest evidence that we have, what we know is that it is more transmissible, which means it spreads faster. So when we first started learning about COVID transmission and the alpha wave, and then, of course, the waves that followed, you know, we were talking about transmission happening in a matter of minutes. For context, with Omicron, it really is a matter of seconds. And so it's pretty clear that when we say that this virus is more transmissible, what we mean is it's a shorter exposure window. It takes less time of being exposed to an infectious person for a person to get enough exposure to the virus themselves to get sick. I think the second thing that's really interesting about this, one of the things that we're learning from looking at the evidence that's coming out of the Omicron variant in the UK is that with Delta, it's clear that the virus would come in, of course, through the nasal passages, and then Delta did a really good job, unfortunately, in making its way down into the lungs, which is why a lot of people got really, really sick with Delta, because COVID would set up shop in your lungs. You would see people, you know, have scarring in the lungs, get really serious cases, and then, of course, pneumonia and many hospitalizations and folks who had to be put on a ventilator and then many deaths because of that. With Omicron, it seems that the virus is much better at staying up in the nasal passages and having, you know, really infecting the upper respiratory airways, which may be, some scientists are saying, one of the reasons why we are seeing Omicron be a little bit milder in patients. But what that means, back to the transmissibility, is that it's staying in the nose, which means that the virus, again, is much more contagious.
What about in terms of symptoms? What should people be looking for?
It's really important for people to pay attention to the symptoms that we've been talking about since the beginning. So clearly, when you have a fever, when you have a cough, a dry cough, when you have some fatigue that is, you know, not necessarily what you normally experience, those are some of the main things that we need to pay attention to. But I would also encourage folks who have regular cold symptoms, so nasal congestion, pressure in the sinuses, a headache. Those are also symptoms that we're seeing. And I think especially when you start to have some of these symptoms all together at once, then it really is wise for you to go ahead and get tested.
It seems like there are a lot more breakthrough cases related to the Omicron variant. Should this be a cause for concern as far as the efficacy of the vaccine and maybe future variants?
What we know is that it looks from the data in other places in the world that have experienced the Omicron variant that also have had vaccinations. You look at these folks, and the vaccination is still working really well in terms of preventing severe disease. That's what you really need to remember is, you know, even though we might see an increase in the incidence and prevalence of infections among those who've been vaccinated and even vaccinated and boosted, what we see is that those vaccinations are still doing a great job at keeping folks out of the hospital and preventing death. I think that's the bottom line.
Most school districts in Georgia, including Clark County schools, are returning from winter break to in-person learning this week. President Joe Biden has said schools should stay open. Do the potential problems, especially in terms of student achievement and mental health outcomes that come with virtual learning, do those potential problems outweigh the COVID risk, especially in sort of the ages 5 to 18 cohort?
That's such a great question. I mean, you know, I think that it's going to take us a very long time in terms of peer-reviewed research to truly understand the huge effects of the COVID and what missing school has done for children who have not been able to be in person at school. So we're just beginning to understand the full extent to which, you know, being virtual for learning has affected our children. You know, that the question that you have asked, I feel is much bigger than me. I'll give you my own personal opinion on that. You know, I think especially when it comes to a situation where we have intense intergenerational poverty and many of our students, you know, when it comes to their meals during the day, two of their three meals coming from school, protecting the food security, protecting the, you know, ability of children to not just to learn but to thrive in general, I think that we need to do everything that we can to keep them in person and learning. Now, that being said, what we see with Omicron and the transmission is, with this being so much more contagious, it is going to be the case that we're going to see a lot more children getting sick with Omicron in our school system. I think one of the more concerning things that we're seeing, too, is that we're seeing more children who are being hospitalized because of COVID with this wave than we have seen in the past. So all that I can say is that we have vaccines that have received, you know, the go-ahead, the green light for children to receive them over the age of 5. And, you know, I think that to whatever extent parents can protect their children with those vaccines, that that's the best thing that we can do at this juncture. But, Martin, I think when we talk about going back into the schools, you know, what's going to happen, even if Clark County returns in person, which it looks at this juncture like they're still planning to do, you know, we're going to see a lot of teachers, bus drivers, administrators getting sick too. So, you know, it's about the cases in children, but it's also about, you know, our school system's ability. And this is what we're seeing nationwide with many different industries, whether it's the airline industry, the healthcare industry. You know, it's going to be a rough few weeks, I think, with staffing shortages across basically every industry that you can think of. And so ultimately, you know, having a choice really is a privilege. It could be the case both locally, statewide, and nationally that we see a few weeks here where it's really not a choice anymore, because if schools don't have the staff that they need to run the school, then, you know, there will have to be some decisions that are made to go virtual for a time.
I want to talk a little bit about vaccinations, especially locally. At the time that we're talking, far less than half of Athens-Clarke County residents over the age of 5 are fully vaccinated, according to the CDC. And the vaccination rate seems to have kind of plateaued over the last month, few weeks. How do we get these numbers up?
So that, again, is a question that I think communities across the world are wrestling with. It's really clear that the southern United States has had levels of vaccine hesitancy that are much higher than the rest of the country. And I think that we are going to pay the price for that as Omicron hits us, because, again, what we know about the vaccines is that they prevent hospitalizations and death. I'm very concerned that our lack of vaccination, especially full vaccination and boosters in this region, is going to quickly overwhelm our hospitals in the coming weeks. When you look at why people don't get vaccinated, I think one of the biggest mistakes that researchers make, and that I include myself in this, it's sort of treating a person who doesn't get vaccinated as a monolith, or treating that group as a monolith, which is to say, just assuming that everybody who has not gotten vaccinated has done so for the same reason or set of reasons. And what we find when we look at some national studies being done by the Kaiser Family Foundation is that there are actually lots of different reasons why people don't get vaccinated. And they are not all mutually exclusive. Right. So a person's decision or choice, again, choice is a privilege. So let's assume for a second that you have the resources like transportation and information that you need to get to the vaccination itself. But the choice to get vaccinated is really pretty complex.
It seems like there's been a lot of confusion over the course of the pandemic about what exactly to do, the guidance around it. But is it fair to say that the essentials of practicing good public health on a personal level really haven't changed. Wash your hands, wear a mask when you're in public, avoid large gatherings. Like, that hasn't changed, right? That's still what we need to be doing.
Yeah, I think that's true. Since the beginning, again, one of the biggest mistakes that has been made at the national state level, I think, has been around mixed messaging. But yes, we need to wash our hands. We need to wear a mask, whether you're vaccinated or not right now. You need to socially distance and avoid large crowds when you can while we're in a large wave. And I think, hopefully the testing shortage will start to get better as we have more resources at the national state level towards testing. But you need to get tested if you're sick and symptomatic. If you're symptomatic, you need to behave as if you're sick. So that's the only thing I'd add to your list right there is those are the consistent things, and that's what we need to continue to do, especially as we're in the depths of the Omicron wave.
Dr. Grace Bagwell Adams, thank you so much for your time and for all the information.
Thank you, Martin.
Dr. Grace Bagwell Adams is an associate professor and assistant dean for outreach, engagement, and equity at the University of Georgia College of Public Health and the principal investigator of the Athens Wellbeing Project. We spoke earlier this week.